First off, everyone remembers what a set is, right? Does anyone not? Can anyone tell me the definition of what a set is?
A group of numbers that are different? A group of things.
Yes, a group of things, a group of objects, that's right.
Order does not make a difference?
And order does not make a difference, that's very important. Yep.
A group of distinct objects in any order.
Yep, a group of distinct objects in any order. That pretty much sums it up. So all the objects are all different, are all unique objects, and the order that they're listed in does not matter. So, and remember the format, we write it in the curly braces, and we write our objects. So in this example, I'm using numbers. We write our objects inside of the curly braces with commas in between. And that's how we represent the different elements in a set. So the order of these three things doesn't matter. This is just the set containing the numbers 1, 2, and 3. Okay? Now, does anyone remember what a subset is? Yes?
It's where you combine the two?
No. Wait. A subset. You want me to ask someone else?
Yes.
Okay. Right there, Andrew.
Is it a set inside a set?
It's a set which all of its elements are contained inside of another set. Yes, that's right. Did you have something to add to that? Okay. Cool. So if we call this set C, well, I'm just giving it an arbitrary letter C, and we have another set D, which has the elements 1 and 2 in it, then because all the elements of D are contained within the set C, we can write that D is a subset, and this is the notation that we use, remember, is a subset of C. So this is how we would say that D is a subset of C, because all the elements of D are contained within C. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and don't forget that notation. So, since you guys had some time, I noticed that some of you guys were already working on the exercises, but I want to go through exercise 1 again quick, just to make sure that we've understood this concept. So, for number 1, who would say that it's true or false? Like, what do you guys feel the answer is? Is this set given a set of the larger set? Right in the front of you.
It's true.
It is true. Does anyone disagree with that? No? No? Okay. And yes, I would say that it is true also. All of the elements in the first set are contained within the second set. So for number 2, right there?
It's true.
It's true also. Any disagreements? No. Okay, great. Number 3, right in the back there.
False.
It's false. Why is it false?
Because in the sub, in what they ask, is it a subset of, there's 9, and in the big superset, there's 1.
Yes, that's correct. So because 9 is not in the set of which it could be a subset of, per se, if that's the best way to say it, it's not a real subset. Because it has something else in it that's not in the larger set. So 3 is false. Okay. Number 4. In the back.
No, because there's 1, 2, 0, 3 in the subset. And then there's 1,203 in the other one.
Yes. So even though the second set contains all the correct digits, it's considering it one number, and that number is definitely not 1 of 1, 2, 0, or 3. So number 4 was false. Okay, so number 5. Yes, right there.
False.
False. Why?
Because the second one doesn't have 3.
It doesn't have 3, that's correct. Okay, number 6.
Is it false?
No. Number 6 is actually true.
Yeah. But you can't make something out of nothing.
Now, remember from last week, we actually did say that the empty set was a subset, it wasn't a subset, it was a set, and it contains nothing though, right? Do you guys remember this from last week?
Not
so
really.
The empty set, and we can write it in two ways. We can either write it just as squiggly brackets with nothing in it, or some people write it as a circle with a line through it, and those are the two ways to write it. And it is a set, and it just doesn't contain anything. So, in the back there?
But the other one does contain stuff. So
yeah,
like,
it does. However, because there is nothing in the first set, technically everything that's in the first set is contained within the second set because there's nothing in it.
Oh, I get it.
Right? Okay. By definition, a subset is just a set where all of its elements are contained by another set. Right? So, did you have some input or?
You can't make something out of nothing, but if you have all
the
ingredients for everything, you just
don't
make it
good,
and that's kind of
what. Yeah, that's a good way to explain it. I like that explanation. But yes, so the empty set is a subset of this larger set. In fact, so I will put true here. But there's a greater statement that we can make, and we can say that the empty set is a subset of every other set out there. It's a subset of every set. Because no matter what the second set is, it's always going to contain all of the elements because there is no elements in the other set. Does that make sense to everybody? That's a bit of a more complicated idea, but definitely a very interesting one. Okay, so from last class, we were talking about potentially repainting your room, and we wanted to pick two colors to repaint the room out of this list of six colors. Where this list of six colors was our universal set. These are all the colors that we're considering. There's no other colors that are coming into this example that we're dealing with today. So, and I believe the set that we chose was blue and yellow, right? So, is the set C a subset of the set S? Yes.
Yes.
Because we picked the colors straight from here, so hopefully it should be. If it didn't, we made up our own color, I guess, is what would have happened. So, but we also wanted to know how many combinations of two colors are there?
It's number of permutations divided by the number of arrangements that the two colors can go in.
Yeah, exactly. So, yep, that's right. So we discussed that to figure out how many different choices we had, we use something similar to our permutations where we use the box example and we say that there's six choices for the first color and five choices for the second color. However, did you have something you wanted to ask about?
Yeah, I was just kidding.
Okay. But we also have to be aware that, remember, when we're picking two colors, it doesn't matter the order, right? If we're forming a subset like C here, it doesn't matter what order these are in. It could be either order, and unfortunately, when we calculate it like this, we account for two orders. So, if we actually listed all of those out, and if I'm just going to list them using the letters, so R, O, B, Y, G, and P, the first letter of each one, just because it'll be a little bit less writing. But if you listed all of them out, so we have R, O, and then O, R, and then R, B, E-R, R-Y, Y-R, R-G, G-R. Now, and you'll notice that when we're listing all these out, and I could list the rest, there's 15, I believe, or sorry, there's 30 of these. But we're double counting when we're just talking about the number of permutations. We're double counting when we say, well, we could have chosen red first and orange second, or orange first and red second. So we need to account for that. So as this young man in the front row, which I forget your name.
Andrew.
Mm-hmm. We need to divide by the number of ways that we could arrange two objects, specifically, after we've found all the permutations of two out of the six. So we divide by 2 factorial. And this gives us 15. Because 6 times 5 is 30, divided by 2, equals 15. Does everyone here remember the factorial notation from last class? Because I think there's a few people who might have not been here. So let me just recap that real quick. If we have a number, let's say 4, and an exclamation mark after that, what we mean by that is 4 times 3 times 2 times 1. You start at the number that you're given, and you multiply all the numbers below it down to 1. Okay? Yes.
There's also another way to do that.
Yes.
That's the one we just talked about last time.
Yes.
It's where you
6 factorial over, I divided by 6, like in brackets, 6 minus 5 factorial times, I think, I forget what.
Yeah, you're really close. I'm going to write it out right now, okay? So, but we also said, and we gave a general formula with when you're doing combinations. This is called a combination right here. And this is the number of combinations that there are of two colors in our case. So if we want combinations, I'll get your question in a minute, but I'm going to write out the formula first, okay? Combinations, and we want K out of N objects, where K and N are letters used to represent numbers that we don't know yet. And the formula was this. N factorial over K factorial times, and then in brackets, N minus K, oops, that's K, factorial. So does everyone recall this formula from last time? Okay. So let me show you why this formula works here really quick, though. So if we look back to this example, and if we rewrite it as 6 factorial over, now k in this case is 2 factorial, times, and then we want 6 minus 2, if we're going to use this formula. So 6 is the big number, k, which is equal to 2, is the little number. So we have 6 minus 2 is equal to 4, n minus k, 6 minus 2 is equal to 4 factorial. So if we write this out in the expanded form, well, what you'll notice is that these last four numbers are the same as these last four numbers, and they end up canceling one another out in the grand scheme of things. So this is why we can write it like this, because if you multiply by 4 then divide by 4, well, that just leaves the number the same as it was. So what we'll do is, well, let's just cross one of these out, right? And this number is still the same, because we've crossed out the 4 on the top and the 4 on the bottom. Because if you, again, you multiply a number by 4 and you divide by 4, you're going to get the same number. Same with the 3, and with the 2, and with the 1. And so we're left with the formula that we derived earlier, which is this. So it's just a more concise way to write it, especially if you have, let's say, 10 objects and you're choosing 5. It would be a lot more concise to write this formula here than to write out the expanded form, like over here, where we did here. So let's do exercise number 2 now. Okay, so let's go through question number 1. So does anyone have an idea? So the question is, just make sure we're on the same question. So recall the example where you're renovating your room and have the option to paint your room using any of the colors in the set S. So how many combinations of 5 colors right in the back there?
6.
And how did you get that?
720.
How'd you get 720 though?
6 factorial.
6 factorial? Okay. So did you use this formula here? Okay, so she just used the formula, which is perfectly fine. So 6 factorial over, and then we do K, we're choosing 5 colors, so 5 factorial times, and then this is 1 factorial. And if you ever want to double check, these numbers are always going to add up to 6, so if you want to check and make sure you have the right numbers on the bottom, the numbers on the bottom should add up to the number on the top. Okay? So if we write this out, if we calculate this, so she calculated the numbers, and the top number was 720, and the bottom number was 120, I believe, right? Times 1, because 1 factorial is just 1. Yep?
Teacher, you don't really need to do that, since automatically 6 factorial is 6 times 5 times 4 times 3 times 2 times 1, and 5 factorial is everything but the 6.
Yeah, exactly. No, for sure. So let me do it this way, and then I'll show class that with the way that you just explained. So this, anyways, is equal to 6. The way that Andrew said in the front here to do it is you you could also say that this is equal to 6 times 5 times 4 times 3, all the way down to 1. And on the bottom, we also have 5 times 4 times 3 times 2 times 1 times 1. And again, we can just cancel out all of those and all of those, and we're left with 6 divided by 1, which is just 6. Does that make sense to everybody? So it can save you doing a lot of work, especially if you don't have a calculator on hand. Usually with factorials, there's a moderately simple way to simplify things a little bit more before you have to actually calculate it. Okay, number 2. How many combinations of 4 colors can you make? Oh, I'll leave that there for now. Right in front?
15.
15. So we'll use the formula again. 6 factorial over, and we're choosing 4 colors this time, so 4 factorial times 2 factorial. And again, the way that we could write this, if we realize that the 4 factorial cancel out with the rest of 6 factorial after 4, we could write this as 6 times 5 over 2, which is equal to 15. So that was correct. 15 was the correct answer. There's 15 combinations of 4 colors. And number 3, how many combinations of 0 colors can we make? And does this make sense?
No.
None?
Zero.
Zero?
Zero colors?
Zero colors.
Oh, you're not painting the room at all. Colors, you're not painting.
Yeah, that's essentially how we can describe this. If you're not choosing any colors, you're not painting anything. However, that is still an option, right?
Oh, wow.
I don't want to paint my room.
I don't want to paint my room. Well, that's one option that you could take.
The question
is, when you want to paint your room, so why have an option that you don't?
Recall the example where you were renovating your room and you have the option to paint your room. Not that you necessarily have to paint your room.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, if I explained it verbally that way, I apologize, but the way the question was meant to be worded was the way that it's written on the sheet of paper, where it's an option, it's not necessarily mandatory that you should paint your room. What I will show you is this. Let's actually write it out with the formula.
No.
So 6 factorial over, choosing 0 colors, 0 factorial times 6 factorial. Now who can tell me what 0 factorial is? Who remembers from last class?
1.
1. So this is actually equal to, now we'll cancel these out. We're actually just left with 1 over 1, which is just 1. 1 divided by 1 is 1. So according to the formula, we have one way to do that. And what I was trying to say is, this one way that we can choose no colors is by choosing not to paint our room. That's kind of how you can think of it in this example. So we actually do say that there's one way to choose no colors. Yes?
So that's like saying the only way to paint, the formula says that the only way to paint the room that way is the empty set?
Yeah, the only way to not paint your room is to choose the empty set. Yeah. So another key observation right here is, remember when we were talking about subsets, technically the empty set is a subset of our original set of colors of X, which I don't have written down anymore. But we have that. The empty set is a subset of S. So since this formula really gives us the number of combinations, it also gives us the number of subsets of that number of elements. It makes sense that we'd get 1 because for no elements, because there is the empty set. What's up?
So when you
calculated how many colors we need to cover for us to paint. Did that result in the empty set too? No, because every subset that we're dealing with when we're dealing with 4 colors is going to have 4 elements in it. Now, I can list them out if you guys want me to. I can list out the 2-element ones. But it's essentially just going through it systematically and saying, okay, what are all the sets? And you can go through for any number of elements and go through systematically and find every individual subset if you want. But we're more concerned with the numbers right now, because they're going to help us with our next section. Okay, so the probability. So does anyone have an idea of how we define probability, or like what it means?
The chance that something will happen.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like how likely an event is to occur in a certain situation. Now, in mathematics, however, we want a more defined definition because, as you guys have seen already from the previous lessons, we've kind of harped a little bit on making sure that things are well defined, that they have a specific definition. So some of you, if you're in grade 7 or 8, you may have seen some more defined definitions of probability. I'm going to write a couple out for you here, just different ways that we can consider how to calculate probability. So the classical definition is this. We say that the probability of an event is the number of ways the event can occur divided by the total possible outcomes, total number of possible outcomes. Provided that, sorry, in the back there.
Isn't that the same though?
The same as what?
Like, to get the total possible outcomes, so if you need to find the number of ways the event can occur?
Well, so let me say this. The event is something specific, whereas the number of total possible outcomes refers to anything that can occur from the example. So let me give you an example here real quick. When rolling a die, the probability of rolling a 2 is 1/6. Because if the event is rolling a 2, if that's the event that we want to occur, well, there's six possible ways, outcomes that can happen when we actually roll a dice. It's or a die. It's either 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. So the number of ways the event can occur is 1 because only one of those faces has a 2 on it. The total possible outcomes is 6 because there's 6 dice. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
So now, the other thing that you need to remember with this, and I'll write it down here really quick, so I'm sorry if if you guys have to squeeze this in between, you can write it underneath if you don't have room, is that this is provided that all outcomes are equally likely. But let's say the die has a weight in it so that it lands on 2 more often, right? Well, then we run into the problem that the 2, if you have like cheating dice, then the problem is this definition won't work because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, the chances of getting any of those numbers aren't equally likely. So the next definition kind of tries to account for that. So this is the experimental. This says that the probability of an event, so it's the number of trials in which the event occurs divided by the total number of trials based on data from a long series of repetitions of an experiment. Okay, so, and I'll say that again. So the probability of an event is the number of trials in which the event occurs over the total number of trials, and based on data from doing an experiment many, many times. So the hope is that if you do an experiment, like let's say rolling the die again, let's say 500 times.
Whoa.
After you do it that many times, you would hope that a 2 would be rolled about 1/6 of the time. Like you'd be able to figure out the probability of each number rolling from that. And obviously you have to do like a lot of repetitions of the experiment. Because if you only rolled a die once and you got a 3, and then you said, well, based on my experiment, 3s roll 100% of the time. That would be kind of silly, right? That doesn't make sense. So the idea is, if we do it enough times, we should get an accurate estimation of what the probability really is. Both definitions have areas where they could potentially miss, you know, some of the things. Like, for example, we discussed there's the possibility that the events aren't actually equally likely, even though we think they are. Whereas in this, I mean, we can't do it an infinite number of times. We can only do it a certain number of times. So are our probabilities actually going to be accurate? And there's one more definition, and it's the subjective definition. So this states that the probability of an event is a measure of how sure a person is that the event will occur. So there isn't really a mathematical statement for this. It really is just, how sure am I that something is going to happen? For example, after considering all the data, if I was a weatherman, I might say that the probability of rain tomorrow is 30% based on what I've looked at. But there really is no accurate way to calculate that, right? Because there could be an unexpected change in the wind or something like that. So based on the evidence that they have, they make an estimate on how likely the event is to occur based on what's happened before, things like that. So an area where you're not totally sure what's going to happen, but there definitely is a chance. And so you essentially look at some evidence and try to figure out a number that best represents the probability of that event occurring. So you'll notice, though, that in all of these definitions, the probability is a number between 0 and 1, or a percentage, which, if you guys have done, I'm sure you guys have done that in school, converting percents to decimals to fractions.
Yeah.
Have you guys done that?
Yeah.
And they all represent numbers between 0 and 1, and that's the important thing. So if an event had a probability of 0, what would that mean?
It's like never
going to
happen.
It's never going to happen. And what if it was 1?
It's
going to
happen.
It's always going to happen. So, anyways, so why don't you guys take a look at exercise number 3? Okay? I'm going to go get another piece of chalk real quick. I'll be right back. Experimental for number 1.
Oh, wait.
You know what? I'm going to put it down, but who else has another idea? Okay. And you put classical. What I would say is, yep. Well, depends on how you're considering it. What I would say, what I said is classical, but you could argue either way.
How? Wouldn't experimental be, I say, winning a raffle?
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of. It depends on how the raffle is conducted, because there's been some details left out. So if this was a raffle where there was only one winner drawn, there was only one ticket drawn, I'd be hesitant to say experimental, because we want the process to be repeated a number of times. Whereas we can use the classical definition and say before that one name gets pulled, we could say, well, there's, let's say, 20 raffle tickets and one's getting pulled. So the chance of you winning if you have one ticket in there is 120, right?
If you have all 20 tickets.
So you can, I think this example would be better described by classical. But if it was a case where it was, 5,000 tickets and 100 winners were drawn, I think that's a pretty good way to test an experimental.
The question doesn't say winning a raffle, it says participating.
Yeah, it does say participating in a raffle. So how I would calculate it in that sense is, how many tickets have you put in divided by the total number of tickets? And that would be your chances of winning. Yes. Either one. So, but I think it's better described as classic.
Yes.
Okay. Number 2. Almost done here, guys. Yep.
Subjective.
Yes. Because you really have no data to base your prediction off of, other than how you think the test went, because you can't actually see your answers and, check them, that kind of thing. So it's based on how you feel you did. And the last one, number 3.
Experimental.
Okay, so who can tell me why number 3 was experimental? Right back there. Yep, you're right there.
Because it's the only one left.
Because it's the only one left. That is a very good answer. I like that answer. But I want a more mathematical.
Because you're testing several objects?
Yeah, because, exactly. Because we're testing a number of objects. And really, there's no other way to collect data on how many of your products are defective other than to experiment and to try and test them, right? I would say number three is definitely experimental. That would be the definition that you use. I have a couple more definitions for you. Here is just some terminology for when we're dealing with probability. So a sample space is a set of distinct outcomes for an experiment or process. In a single trial, one and only one outcome will occur. Okay? So this is very similar to the universal sets that we talked about. And we're still going to use S to represent the set. So in the case where we were talking about rolling a die, the sample space, we can describe it two ways. We can describe it many ways. But one way to describe it would be like this. So when rolling a die, one of our sample spaces could be the numbers from 1 to 6, because that's the outcome on each face of the die, right? So let's call this sample space 1. We could make another sample space, though. This could also be a sample space, S equal to the set containing the elements odd and even. Because we're still, every time we roll a die, we're still going to get one of these outcomes and only one. We're never going to get odd and even at the same time, but we'll always get one. Right? So this is another way that we can define it. In general, though, it's usually easier if you break it up as much as possible, like this one. There will be some cases where you'll want to define it like this, but those cases are few and far between. Quite often, you want to break it up as small as possible. Because what else you can do is you can define an event, and an event is a subset of the sample space. So an event, again, subset of the sample space. And we use events to describe situations. So if we go back to our die rolling example here, if this was our sample space, if this was all the possible outcomes that we're dealing with, we could, let's say, make an event A be a number less than 3 is rolled. So that could be an example of an event. Now if we were to actually write out the elements of this set, right, instead of writing it descriptively, because we can do both. We can write the elements descriptively or individually. If we write the elements individually, this would be the set 1, 2. This is how we would describe the set by listing the individual numbers in the set. So we could say 1 or 2 or a number less than 3. It's the same set. And one other important thing, the last thing is a bit of notation. So there's a few notations that I want to describe for you. One, and I meant to describe this when I was talking about combinations, but I'll say it now. There's an easier way to even write this. So remember I described this formula over here. This is a simpler way to write it. Well, there's still another abbreviation that we use. Actually, I'll write it on this board. So it's equal to, and it's a pretty easy notation. You just put two brackets, you put the larger number on top and the number of elements that you're choosing on the bottom. So if you see that notation, it's just because I didn't want to write out this whole statement. It's a shorter, easier way to write it. Okay? So that's one thing that you'll have to remember. So I wrote that rather big, so I'm going to write it a little bit smaller over on the other board so I have this board to use. So you can write it like that. But in regards to probability, we also say that every element in the sample space has a probability. And how we represent it is this. I'm going to go back to the die rolling example again. So let's say we wanted to find the probability of rolling a 1, or if we wanted to write that, we would say, so, probability of rolling a 1, for example, is, and this is how we write it, capital P, and then in brackets we put the outcome. So the probability of 1, and that's how you would read that, and we can, and from earlier we know that this is actually 1/6, right? So what we do is, for every outcome in here, we assign a specific number to each outcome, and we write it like this, and that number is the probability. Does everyone understand this so far? And then the last thing, before we go to the rest of our problems and examples, is this. So we could also say, if we're looking at A over here, we can also write the probability of an event. And how you would write that is like this. So if we use A as our example, which is written over there, there's two elements in that set. How you write the probability of an event is, it's the probability of each individual outcome in the set added together. So the probability of the event A, or the elements in that set, is the probability of the first element that we wrote down, the probability of the second element. Order doesn't matter, remember. But yes. So this would be equal again to 1/6 plus 1/6. And what's that?
2/6.
2/6? How else could we write that?
1/3.
1/3. Excellent. So, does everyone understand?
Yeah.
Do you have any questions? No questions? Okay, let's move on to exercise 4 then. You have a set of 15 pool balls, as shown to the right. If you select one ball at random, calculate the probability of selecting the following. So, and I have the balls up here so that you guys can see the colors, because some of them refer to colors, and it's a little hard to see when it's printed in black and white. So we have the colors on the board here. So we want to figure out, for part A, the probability of getting a solid if we pick one of the balls at random. So let's move all of the solids that we can see over to one side. So what are all the solids here?
1 to 8
is what was said, and that's true. So I'm actually going to try and select all of these. Okay, so now there's 15 overall, right? There's 15 pool balls, 1 to 15, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 solids. So what's the probability of getting a solid? In the back there? 8 out of 15, that's right. So, and what I meant to say, another thing I meant to say, we're going to use the classical definition for almost all of our probability questions, like exclusively. For part A, probability of solid. And so again, a solid, you might consider the solid an event, because if we consider each outcome and each individual number, then the outcome getting a solid is an event which contains 8 objects. So I could write out 1 over 15 plus 1 over 15 plus 1 over 15 8 times, but instead I'm just going to write 8 over 15, because I think it's pretty evident just even from looking at the picture. So B, even numbers. So let's keep the odd numbers over here, even numbers over here. We'll separate this again. Oops, that's easy. How many even numbers do we have, and how many odd numbers do we have? Well, how many numbers overall? Right there. Yep. Yep, so the probability of getting an even number then is? Yep, that's right, 7 over 15. See? So, we want solid numbers and solid balls and even numbers. So, right in the back there? 4 to 15, because, and fortunately we solve all our even numbers together. If we take the striped balls away, we're left with 4 balls left over. So, 4 over 15 is the probability there. D, what about solid or even? So the ball that you select is either a solid ball or has an even number on it.
Can it be both though?
Yeah, it can be both.
Oh, okay.
11 out of 15, because if we take all the solids, all the solids. So we have 11 balls over here and 4 balls on the left. So probability of this is actually 11 over 15. Part E. Okay, so even and blue. Right there.
Oh no, 7 over 15.
Sorry?
7 out of 15.
7 out of 15. And why do you say that?
Because the two blue balls are even.
They're even and blue, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so and.
Oh, only even and blue?
Yep, it has to be both.
Never mind. 2 out of 15.
2 out of 15,
okay,
yes.
I was confused.
That's right. Now, what's interesting about the blue and even balls? A set of blue balls, a set of even balls.
Every blue ball is even.
Every blue ball is even. So, if we're going to talk about subsets, and I'll just say this really quick, we can say that the set of blue balls is a subset of the set of even balls. Does that make sense? Right? So, and then part F, finally. Striped and black.
Nothing.
Nothing. Is it nothing?
Yeah.
What's the actual probability?
Zero.
Zero, exactly. Has to be a number between 1 and 0. So there are no balls in there that are striped and black. We could write this as 0 over 15 if we wanted to, which is really just equal to 0. Right? Oh, sorry, I didn't even write this in. Okay? Make sense? Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave the last two exercises to you guys. I'm also going to hand out the problem sets and the rest of the problems.